It's Tuesday, July 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi and welcome. Coming up, stock markets in China plummet.
About 5 a.m., they suddenly started firing, and after that, they have been holed up in the police station.
India deals with another terror attack. Also ahead, we catch up with President Obama in Ethiopia. Talks resume on a massive Pacific trade deal. New music from Tyrese. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. The Chinese government's dramatic efforts to prop up the mainland's falling stock markets suffered a serious setback Monday, as major indexes suffered their biggest single-day plunge in 8 years. The Shanghai Composite Index lost 8.5%, while the CSI 300 Index of the largest listed companies in Shanghai and Shenzhen shed 8.6%. Some analysts attributed the sell-off to investors' profit-taking following the government's massive capital support, which succeeded in bolstering shares over the past 3 weeks. The Chinese market sell-off has had effects around the world, and joining me is Alexis Christophorus from our New York Bureau. Alexis, hello, and what has been the impact on the other markets so far?
Well, Jim, the stock sell-off in China proved contagious, and certainly while the selling was less dramatic, we saw stocks in Europe and the U.S. also fall. The Chinese stocks suffered their biggest one-day drop in 8 years, with China's Shanghai Composite Index tumbling 8.5%. Investors headed for the exits over worries that the Chinese government will pull back on measures to prop up the market, and the IMF has actually urged the Chinese government to eventually wind down its support measures, which include banning major shareholders from selling stakes and halting trading in more than 1,400 companies. Making things even worse, there was some disappointing numbers on China's industrial profits. They fell 0.3% in June from a year earlier. So really, Jim, this was just further proof that the Chinese economy is losing steam.
Alexis, what effect did this sell-off have on the commodities markets and oil in particular?
Well, worries about China definitely spread to the oil market. We saw crude take another tumble. It's now trading below $48 a barrel. And that steep plunge in the Shanghai stock market is just feeding worries about a slowdown in Chinese energy demand. We have to remember, China is the world's second largest energy consumer. So the oil markets are really always keeping an eye on what's happening in that part of the world. Also, we saw oil prices come under pressure by new figures from Baker Hughes, which showed the number of oil drilling rigs in the U.S. increased by 21 in the latest week. That's the largest gain we've seen in more than a year. And as we know, analysts say global oil supplies are ample right now, with major oil producers in the Middle East Gulf competing for market share, and they're already pumping 2 to 3% more oil than needed. So it's times like these when we realize just how interconnected and what a global economy we have when a big stock sell-off in China can affect not only world equity markets, but commodity markets as well. Jim?
Alexis Christophorus, joining us from New York. Thank you, Alexis.
Thank you.
Well, as China's mainland stock markets rose over the past year, many investors borrowed money to buy stocks in what is known as margin lending. But as markets have fallen, many investors could be struggling to pay back those loans. Beijing has taken extensive measures to try to ensure that the markets do not fall. They've frozen trading in many stocks, using the central bank to support buying stocks, and forcing anyone with 5% of shares in a company to hold on to them for 6 months. Well, certainly social media has been abuzz, and we turn now to how it's responding to today's market downturn. As always, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to tell us what people are tweeting. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. Like we heard from Alexis earlier, what happened today on the Shanghai Stock Exchange really dampened the investor sentiment. And what's even scarier is that today's incident is just another event that indicates how volatile the Chinese stock market really is. So let's take a look at how Twitter users responded to the Chinese stock market over the last 30 days. Hashtag China Meltdown was first used on July 6th and peaked the next day with more than 2,600 tweets using that hashtag.
Well, that's not a very flattering hashtag for sure.
Absolutely. And that's when the Chinese stocks plunged right after the shutdown at the New York Stock Exchange. And you know what happened today is not a good thing when that hashtag reemerges after nearly 20 days of hiatus.
Absolutely. Well, what is the reaction from Chinese investors?
Well, for that, we turn to Weibo, China's answer to Twitter. As you know, Jim, Beijing has a very tight control over its citizens' access to social networking sites, and Twitter and Facebook are not available in China. And Weibo users mostly write in Mandarin Chinese, but British newspaper The Guardian shared translation of a couple of Weibo posts Monday. One investor wrote, "People ask me how I feel about the fall. I have only these few words. I am used to it." Another investor urged others to pull out now before losing even more. Some say the general sentiment is very bearish among investors and the world's fastest growing economy. Jim?
Oh, thank you for that analysis today, G. That was G. Abby Lee. And of course, she's on Twitter as well. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. And if you were wondering how to spell it, well, there are a few E's in there. J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition, coming to you from studios in Washington, D.C. India stepped up security along its border with Pakistan and sounded a high alert across the country after a terror attack killed at least 7 people, including policemen and civilians, in the northern Punjab state. We hear more now from Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi.
Police say a group of 3 to 4 heavily armed militants dressed in army fatigues came in a car, sprayed a bus with bullets, injuring several civilians, then stormed a police station in Dinanagar town in Punjab's Gurdaspur district. The town lies close to India's border with Pakistan. A Punjab Chief Minister advisor, Harcharan Bains, says the assault began early Monday.
About 5 a.m., they suddenly started firing, and after that, they have been holed up in the police station. And the Punjab police is surrounded those people. The entire area has been cordoned off.
The attack continued for many hours as commandos and police deployments were rushed to flush out the militants. The fierce firing brought panicked residents out of their homes. The casualties included policemen and civilians. The sound of gunshots reverberated on television screens. Police say 5 bombs were also found on rail tracks between Dinanagar and Pathankot, a town with a heavy army presence, suggesting that more attacks had been planned. Punjab, which witnessed a bloody Sikh insurgency more than 3 decades ago, has not seen militant attacks like this one for many years, although such attacks have been witnessed in the neighbouring Jammu and Kashmir state. Counter-terrorism officials said the gunmen belonged to Pakistan-based militant groups. New Delhi alleges these groups sneak infiltrators into Kashmir to mount terror attacks, a charge Islamabad denies. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
President Barack Obama is urging Ethiopia's leaders to protect human rights and ensure good governance while hailing the nation's role in fighting terrorism in East Africa. VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey has more on the president's talks with the Ethiopian Prime Minister in Addis Ababa.
The deadly blast that struck a hotel in Somalia's capital just as Mr. Obama landed in Ethiopia Sunday was a reminder, the U.S. president said, of the very real threat facing the region.
Yesterday's bombing in Mogadishu reminds us that terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab offer nothing but death and destruction, and have to be stopped. We've got more work to do.
It was against this security backdrop that talks between President Obama and Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn took place Monday in Ethiopia's ornate National Palace. Mr. Obama, the first sitting U.S. president to visit Ethiopia, pledged U.S. assistance in the country's fight against extremists. He praised Ethiopian forces for helping to shrink the territory al-Shabaab controls in Somalia and helping stabilize other countries as well.
They have one of the most effective militaries on the continent. And as I noted in my earlier remarks, they are also one of the biggest contributors to peacekeeping. And so they're averting a lot of bloodshed and a lot of conflict because of the effectiveness of their military. And we want to make sure that we're supporting them.
But along with praise for Ethiopia's military might came frank discussions on the country's human rights record. Prime Minister Haile Mariam's party took 100% of seats in May parliamentary elections and is accused of rounding up dozens of opposition members and journalists in so-called counterterrorism operations. Aru Pandey, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
And you may follow more of the president's historic visit to Ethiopia on our website. It's voanews.com. Also, be sure to check out our Facebook page. It's VOA Asia. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The latest round of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, free trade agreement negotiations is getting underway beginning today in Hawaii, with some of the most difficult issues still remaining in the years-long effort to reach a breakthrough in a pact that encompasses 12 Pacific Rim nations that amount to 40% of the world's economy. Now that the United States Congress has granted President Obama trade promotion authority, giving the trade pact fast-track approval or rejection without amendments, U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman is hoping that this is the final round. Japan's economy minister calls this latest round extremely important in determining the fate of the TPP. His Canadian counterpart says a lot of hard work remains. Peter Petrie, a professor of international finance at Brandeis University in Massachusetts, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Canada is among the holdouts to a deal, insisting it will not accept more dairy imports.
Canada, as you know, has an election coming up in October, so for them it's especially difficult to make concessions. And one would think it would have been especially difficult for them to make it ahead of time so that it could have been part of the political campaign. So I'm still hopeful. They've done a tremendous amount of work. A large part of the agreement is finished. I think they understand how the whole agreement could be finished, but it will take some tough decisions.
Well, this obviously comes after the trade promotion authority was given to President Obama in a vote in the Senate. What are the major hurdles that still have to be cleared in the negotiations?
They are intellectual property. They are, as always, agriculture, which is all over the place. And then there are some specific issues that affect many of the economies that are involved. These are narrower issues. For example, Malaysia has also a government which is faces a lot of internal political pressure, and it would have to make some concessions, in that case, on state-owned enterprises. So there are a lot of these small issues. I think they all know how you can solve them, but nobody wants to do that until everybody else has made the tough decisions as well. So I think it's the usual thing about negotiations. They aren't over until they're over.
These talks, of course, have been dragging on for many years. We have a U.S. presidential election coming up The campaign will probably dominate the agenda. That may make it tough for TPP to go if this round does not prove successful.
Well, I think the thing to remember is that every negotiation needs some kind of deadline. And the problem with this one has been is that it really hasn't had one over many years, so that the pressure to try to make those very, very tough decisions hasn't been there. I think the U.S. Presidential election does give it a deadline. That is, the U.S. is critical in this agreement, and I think everybody recognizes that U.S. political support is critical to get the agreement finally implemented. So to the extent that the U.S. would face much tougher pressures politically next year and beyond, that represents a deadline. And deadlines, in the case of negotiations, help people finally make the tough decisions they have to.
A spokesperson for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Asia suggested that it would be difficult to keep the momentum going if ministers failed to reach agreement this week.
It would be very disappointing, but, you know, we have seen many, many negotiations, not just about trade, but many other areas, come down to the deadline and then pass it and then finally reach a conclusion shortly afterwards. So I think we're in for a few very tough days. Some periods when it looks like a deal may fall apart. But again, too much has been invested in this by everybody, certainly by the United States, but certainly not only by the United States, by Japan, by all of our other partners. So I'm still hopeful that with all of this at stake, a positive outcome can be reached. But it's very tough, and I'm delighted that I'm not in those negotiating rooms where the final deal has to be put together.
The far-reaching TPP, once finalized, would reduce or eliminate tariffs, open up nations to more trade and investment, harmonize regulations, and protect labor and environmental standards. On to the music world, where you might know Tyrese from his movies, The Fast and Furious or The Transformers, or maybe from his R&B music or modeling career. But he's also involved in an online conflict with two very powerful members of the radio industry. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about Tyrese's new CD. It's called Black Rose, which made its debut at number one on the music charts.
He's an international superstar, a model, an actor, a musician, and a very handsome man. We're talking about Tyrese. Shauna, he has got a new album, new CD out, and it's apparently just busted all the charts wide open.
Well, yeah, he just released an album called Black Rose. And for the first time in his career, this album has debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. It debuted number one at the top of the R&B charts. It's debuted at number one on international charts. I'll tell you this, as an R&B connoisseur, it is, in my opinion, one of the best R&B albums in the last 10 years.
Cha-ching.
Top to bottom, incredible album. So I'm happy for him because he's been in the game for a long time. This is his seventh album. And he's been working really, really hard trying to gain the kind of recognition that I believe he deserves. And he finally seems to be getting it, but he's a little upset because he's not getting as much as he thinks he should be.
I need your forgiveness and your mercy too. Must be all kind of crazy.
Now, I understand there's like a Twitter war with Martin Seacrest, or there's something that Ty has said about a lack of diversity in the music business?
Well, he posted to his Facebook page an open letter to Ryan Seacrest and Elvis Duran. They're sort of like the two most popular American pop music radio hosts. And so in this open letter, he said, I'm not angry, but I just want to address an issue. And the issue is the lack of diversity in mainstream radio. And what he's saying is he's got this song, Shame, which is a single, which is being played on urban radio, but is not being played on mainstream radio. And the reason he's been given is because it sounds too urban. So he goes on in this letter to say, well, it sounds very much like maybe what Sam Smith is doing. And so why is it that Sam Smith or Robin Thicke or Justin Timberlake can do these very urban sounding songs, R&B soul, when we say urban, that's what we mean, but and get played on mainstream radio, yet I'm relegated to just being played on urban radio, black radio. And so he's just asking this question, and a lot of folks are talking about it online, for one, for fear that he may be alienating himself, because these are two very powerful people in the radio business, and two, wondering whether or not there's something to that.
Well, we welcome your comments on this. You can send a tweet to Shauna, VOA Lady DJ. That's her handle. You can send one to me. I'm David_DBird. Or you can hit her up on VOA_music. Listen for her in the Soul Lounge, www.voanews.com.
I'm ashamed of me, yeah. Baby, I'm ashamed. I'm so sorry, babe. I'm so sorry.
And with all those credits David rolled out, we should mention that David is here just about every day of the week on International Edition, so you definitely want to tune in for him and his music features. Always wonderful. You can find them online as well. Our website is voanews.com, and we also post a lot of our stories on Facebook at VOA Asia. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it's very easy. Look us up at VOA_IE, and you can always email us, voaasia@voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zahrat Abuzaid, and we thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The terrorist group Boko Haram has stepped up its attacks in Nigeria and Cameroon, killing hundreds of people in a string of suicide bombings. On July 26, a young girl estimated to be 10 years old detonated a bomb killing 19 people and injuring dozens more in northeastern Nigeria. The bombing was carried out in a crowded market area in the Nigerian city of Damaturu in Yobe State. The suspect set off the device as security personnel were screening people entering the market area. No group has claimed responsibility, but Boko Haram is suspected to be behind the bombing. Another bombing took place in Cameroon's Marawa town, killing several others on the same day. On July 22nd, additional Boko Haram suicide attacks were launched in the Central Market and Barmare residential neighborhood of Marawa, and multiple bombs were detonated at two bus stations in the northern Nigerian city of Gombe. The United States strongly condemns all these horrific and indiscriminate Boko Haram attacks. Its unconscionable use of children as suicide bombers highlights the group's senseless brutality. We remain committed to working closely with Cameroon, Nigeria, and the Lake Chad Basin countries to defeat Boko Haram, said State Department Deputy Spokesman Mark Toner. The U.S. commends the security forces of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria for their response to these and other recent attacks on innocent civilians. We continue to support the governments and people of the Lake Chad Basin region in their ongoing struggle to defeat Boko Haram. The U.S. supports these efforts through security and counterterrorism assistance programs, which provide intelligence, advisors, training, equipment, and logistics. The U.S. looks forward to expanding this support through the Multinational Joint Task Force, which the Lake Chad Basin countries and Benin are standing up to counter Boko Haram.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.